As China faces the crisis caused by COVID-19, a human rights crisis caused by the Chinese government continues. I'm talking about abuse and detainment of the Uyghurs, a Muslim minority group in the Xinjiang region of China. The Trump administration has criticized the Chinese government, as have senators of both parties, including Republican Marco Rubio.
I will never accept the notion that somehow, in order to be able to sell them more things, we have to look the other way on some of the grotesque human rights violations that we're seeing systemized on their part.
And Democrat Mark Warner.
When America doesn't make part of its foreign policy human rights, individual liberty, freedom of expression, we lose our moral force.
Joining us now is Bill Kirby, professor of business and China studies at Harvard. Welcome.
It's a pleasure to be here, Jeremy.
So take a step back, first of all. Who are the Uyghurs?
The Uyghurs are a historically Turkish people who live in what is now the northwestern quadrant of the People's Republic of China. It was brought into the Qing Empire. They conquered it, although they ruled it rather differently than it has been ruled under Chinese republics. It had a very brief period of what you might call independence or autonomy in the 1930s and 1940s. Otherwise, in the 20th century, it has been under Chinese governance, and particularly since the communist conquest of Xinjiang, under the People's Republic of China. I think one of the great tensions that you see playing out right now is whether it should be ruled with a great deal of autonomy, as the Qing did to a considerable degree, or whether it should be made Chinese and part of the new nation state of China that succeeded the empire.
Well, it seems like Beijing's decision has been to go the latter route there and try to make it more Chinese.
Much more so, and much more so over the last several years than really at any point in the history of the People's Republic. Under the leadership of the party secretary of Xinjiang, a guy named Chen Quanguo, there is an attempt really to sinicize Xinjiang, perhaps above all in a form of cultural and ideological transformation of the Uyghur people.
Well, and a crackdown is the word that some have used. We know they've been building these re-education camps, internment camps, and detaining as many as a million ethnic Uyghurs or more. What does the crackdown look like? What do we know about what's happening?
Well, it's everywhere in the region to the degree that we know that you have not only a million Uyghurs will have been in these camps. That's 10% of the population, and assuming that the majority of them are male, perhaps 20% of the male population. And this harkens back to the harsh nature of early communist rule throughout the country in the 1950s and the system of what was called in Chinese laogai, of reform through labor camps, in which as many as 40 million people across China, or 5% of the entire population, were put in one form of incarceration or another. But beyond the incarceration, there is the tracking of people, the surveillance of individuals, both old-fashioned Soviet and East German-style surveillance, plus modern technological advances in surveillance being employed. Even household goods, such as kitchen knives, have to be registered with the government.
Would you say that every single Uyghur is either incarcerated or being surveilled by the government?
Well, I wouldn't, you know, we're not close enough to be able to make that judgment, but there is certainly the capacity, it appears, to do that. And you don't have to incarcerate every single one of them or to listen to the calls of every single one of them to have a massive intimidating effect on the entire population.
What about the nearly 500,000 kids who have been separated from their families and put into boarding schools? What is happening in these schools?
Those schools, to the degree that has been reported about them, are a means of education in largely Mandarin Chinese as part of the effort to make individuals into Chinese citizens and to move away from a Uyghur ethnic identity. And it has been reported to move them away from their Muslim religious identity.
Is it fair to compare it to other events in history, even the Holocaust?
No, I don't think that's a fair comparison here. We're not dealing with mass murder. We're not dealing with premeditated extermination of individuals. You're dealing with an effort to make them Chinese and to crack down hard on what the Chinese fear is the capacity for terrorism, anti-Chinese terrorism in the region. It's fair to note that earlier in the last decade, several hundred Chinese were murdered by small terrorist groups or at least violent groups in Xinjiang. And the major crackdown effort has had, as a result, no significant pushback from the population in core China. Many Chinese friends tell me they don't necessarily like these techniques, but now, as one of my friends put it, quote, we feel safe, end quote.
What about the U.S.? What has the U.S. done so far? We've heard comments like those from Marco Rubio.
Yep.
Mike Pompeo, the Secretary of State, has said China is home to one of the worst human rights crises of our time, the stain of the century. What has the U.S. said and what has the U.S. done about it?
What the U.S. has done is to join other countries, some 22 countries, in a joint statement to the U.N. Human Rights Council, calling on China to end its policy of mass arbitrary detentions. And the U.S. placed 28 Chinese public security bureaus and companies on our entity list. This is really much more symbolic than real, in effect, blacklisting them in the United States due to their involvement in this surveillance. And the Congress passed the Uyghur Act of 2019 in December that directs the government to impose sanctions and export restrictions related to China's treatment of the Uyghurs. What that actually will mean, in fact, I think remains to be seen. You have different messages on questions of human rights in China coming from Secretary Pompeo, who has been very tough on this issue, and from President Trump, who has said nothing on this issue.
Do you think the U.S. could be doing more or could have an effect if it did do more?
I think it's very unlikely, actually, that it would have a large effect, except for the effect of embarrassment, which is important. China takes seriously its reputation in the world. It is a country that has sought over the last decades to build up its soft power and its reputation as an advanced, a technologically advanced and modernizing country. And the leaks of the Xinjiang papers published by the New York Times that laid bare the nature of this naked crackdown have been seriously embarrassing to the regime. Those are probably in many ways more effective in embarrassing the regime than critique from the United States, whose own record in human rights the Chinese are very quick to criticize.
Bill Kirby, this is the first conversation we've had about China in quite some time that is not about the coronavirus, but we should talk about that because is the Uyghur population at risk from this virus? Does it affect what's going on with the Uyghurs?
So far, very, very little effect. It has been centered in core China, but in the far-flung areas of the empire, such as Xinjiang and Tibet, no significant effect so far.
More broadly, do you think that the coronavirus, COVID-19, is having an effect on the government in Beijing that a number of other crises, whether it be this or the trade war with the United States, have not had, putting more pressure on them?
I think it's put enormous pressure on the government. You have a kind of a stunningly quick critique of Chinese policy in China as well as outside of China, but largely in China, blaming the government for sitting on the news of this new virus. And there is a great deal of political pressure on the government to control this and to control it fast, which has led in turn to unprecedented efforts of the control of the movement of individuals everywhere in the main core areas of China. I have a friend whose parents live in the north coastal province of Shandong, far away from this virus, in a town where there are none infected and none nearby. And yet her parents are not allowed to leave their apartment without a hall pass signed by the local party committee.
One more thing I want to ask you about, and it just seems like some of these stories get connected in ways that we didn't anticipate. The situation in Hong Kong, we've had this protest movement going on for many months in a pretty serious way now. And has the coronavirus, which has shut the border in, to a certain degree between mainland China and Hong Kong, has that had any effect on the protest movement?
I think the virus has had an effect on the protest movement to the degree that individuals are not gathering in public in large numbers. It may reinforce from the point of view of some that there are great dangers of being associated with mainland China. But I think actually for the majority of individuals in Hong Kong, it's a time of solidarity. The real suffering, I think, and this is something we should all take a step back, this should be a time of concern and condolence for the 70,000 almost exclusively Chinese individuals who have this virus, and condolence for the 2,000 families who have lost a loved one to it. And I think in Hong Kong and in other parts of the Chinese cultural sphere, including Chinese communities around the world, there is great concern for their loved ones and a sense of solidarity in this fight.
That is Bill Kirby, a professor of business and China studies at Harvard University. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure, Jeremy.